Regular listeners to the Thursday Morning Breakfast program will know that last week I visited the Eye Stedford in Ebbw Vale, where I met many interesting people from all walks of life. But what you might not know is that I also met a singer who's become internationally known over the last few years and whose roots lie not too far from the Eye Stedford itself. His name is Rhydian Roberts. Rhydian, welcome to 10 Radio.
Philip, pleasure to be here.
Tell me about your roots. You were brought up somewhere between Sennybridge and Brecon.
Yes, I was. Spent 18 years of my life on Trathlon Common, which is what you rightly say, between Sennybridge and Brecon. Went to a school in Brecon and was taught through the medium of Welsh. It was called Ysgol y Banau. And then went to college, which is West Wales, Llandovery College. So I stayed there before my gap year, which I took in South Africa.
Is Welsh your normal language?
My parents don't speak Welsh, but they made a conscious decision to send me and my brother to a Welsh primary school, and before that, a Welsh nursery school. So I guess it was my first language, although over the years, I guess I've used English more, so I'm more confident using English, I would say. I studied Welsh for A-level and GCSE, but more second language than first language literature.
You certainly seem very competent when you're using your Welsh. It's a wonderful language. It's got a magic and a musicality all of its own.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, I mean, it's my favourite language to sing in, without a doubt. And I'm always trying to improve my Welsh. Like, I live in London now, but I've got Sky TV, so if I've got days off, I tune into S4C, because I find that if I'm listening to the word and watching the telly, you can pick things up, and you're never too old to learn. I really want to improve my Welsh, because I find I'm doing an awful lot of Welsh media since coming into the sort of public eye, and I love that. I've always wanted to use my Welsh, and thankfully I'm doing that.
Yeah, as we said, it's such a musical language, and I mean, if you go to the Eye Stedford and you listen to Welsh songs, Welsh traditional songs, Welsh choral singing sung in Welsh, there's a rightness about it.
I'm biased, but I think you're absolutely right. Land of song and poetry, and it's kind of funny, because although the lilt is conducive to singing legato with long lines, the consonants in Welsh people think get in the way with the you know the and stuff like this, but I just think that helps to paint emotion, if you like, through the words. And as I said, I mean, my favourite song, which is on my last album, actually, is Myfanwy, a lovely Welsh folk song, which is sung, probably the most famous folk song in Wales, sung by many male voice choirs. And if you hear me sing that, for me, is written so well for the voice.
Oh,
said that you went to the Eisteddfod and I met you, which was great. I met you and your lovely wife, who I see at many concerts. Say hello to her, by the way, for me. And the Eisteddfod really is close to my heart for many reasons. When I was a boy soprano, I used to compete in the Eisteddfod from the age of 4. They were called the Idr Eisteddfod, which is for the youngsters. And it's always a huge thing going on stage. But it was, for me, it was like the original X Factor, because you're singing in front of large audiences on television, and you're getting judged by a panel. Not exactly the same sort of panel, not celebrity status. But it really instilled in me the desire to want to perform and compete. And now it's strange to think that I'm invited back to perform as a guest on the last night. I mean, it's incredible.
One of the things I loved about the Eisteddfod was the feeling of community. I mean, we've came up from Somerset, we've landed in the middle of the Eisteddfod, and yet we very much felt a part of what was going on. It was like a big family.
Well, I'm glad you felt that way, because I've always felt as if it's a family. But I often worry that people from outside Wales feel it's a little bit of an elitist club, and I think it may have been guilty of that in the past, but I think it's changing now, and I'm really pleased about that. And hopefully artists like me can encourage more people to come to events like the Eisteddfod and enjoy, despite being in the medium of Welsh.
We found it a pleasure and a privilege to be there. I mean, first of all, to be accepted. Everybody we met and talked to, without exception, was so friendly, was so welcoming. And we were lucky enough, while the main choral competition was going on, first of all, we went in and we heard the choir that happened to win. We went in later on to the presentation of the prize, and they were sitting next to us in the row. And we found that, you know, when it was announced that they'd won, they were jumping up and down and cheering and all the rest of it. And we felt included in all this. We really felt a part of it, and we felt for them, and we felt a link with them. And afterwards they were singing outside, spontaneous singing, just for the joy of singing, and it was again a pleasure and a privilege just to sort of move in and out of the people, talk to the people, look at the cup, one thing and another. We felt like family.
Some people ask why the Welsh are good at singing. It's because, I guess you could say, it's innate, it's inbuilt within us, but really from a young age we're exposed to this, and we're encouraged to take part in Eisteddfod. And there's no shame in coming second or third in Eisteddfod. You know, obviously everybody's out to win, but it's just the taking part that really counts. I know it's an awful cliche, but in the Eisteddfod, that's the sense you get, and I just love it. I love it.
I think the other thing is too, it is often possible to say in song what you cannot say in words.
Most definitely. And that's the beauty of performing. And I do a lot of musical theatre as well. And, you know, what you can't say in words, if you need to go that extra bit further to put across your feeling, then what better way than song? And for some people, like my brother, my dear brother Gareth, who can't stand actors who burst into song, I'm the opposite. I think it's a wonderful art form. Musical theatre to really express oneself.
Here I stand alone with this weight upon my heart, and it will not go away. In my head I keep on looking back, right back to the start, wondering what it was that made you change. Well, I tried, but I had to draw the line. And still this question keeps on spinning in my mind. What if I had never let you go? Stayed, if you tried, if we could only turn back time, but I guess we'll never know.
change.
Do you think how it would have been sometimes? Do you pray that I'd never left your side?
Keeps on spinning in my mind.
What if I had never let you go?
Would you be the one I used to love?
What if I had never walked away?
You moved on, and you must have decided at some point to have a go at the X Factor. You said that you liked competing and that you were used to competing in the sort of Eisteddfod circles. What was it that gave you the impetus to go for the X Factor?
The thing that sort of spurred me on to audition for X Factor was, quite simply, I'd finished my studies at Birmingham Conservatoire. I studied for 4 years there, music and opera, and I love competition. I've done a lot of competitions throughout my university years, and I've been quite successful because I thrive on competition. And I thought, well, the X Factor is competition on a huge scale, and it might be the window of opportunity that enables more people to hear my voice and my performance. And so it was a huge risk at the time, and so much so I didn't tell anybody, none of my peers or my family. I just sent off the application form. Then I got a letter back saying, come to Birmingham, I think it was the NEC or something, to audition. And I tell you, Philip, it was horrendous, the whole process. You know, there's thousands of young hopefuls, not all young, actually. There's all cross-section of people. And you kind of keep your head down and go into these auditions and think, what am I doing? But the first audition went pretty well. I remember it well. There was a lady, she was called Lisa, one of the production, who gave me a red or pink piece of paper saying, congratulations, you're through, come back in 2 months' time. I don't know the details, but anyway, so one audition led to another. And then I found myself, after four auditions, in front of Simon Cowell and his panel of so-called experts. But by that stage, you see, it was do or die, because the cameras were rolling. Prior to that, there were no cameras. You were just in a room backstage somewhere, trying to impress the researchers, producers of the show, to see if you could make a story and were interesting enough. because that's one thing to mention. You can't really go into X Factor if you're not deemed to be interesting enough. So, in short, if you've got a good voice, that's not, it's not going to be enough. But I didn't know that at the time. So I think they thought, well, why don't we make him into the most arrogant person on earth? Which, yeah, I laugh about it, but at the time it was quite disturbing to watch because I knew that millions of people were seeing me in a light that I didn't like myself. What they were showing was pretty horrendous. But that's the risk that's the risk I took going into X Factor.
You did have a pretty rocky ride in the beginning in X Factor as well, so it couldn't have been a great deal of fun from time to time.
No, it was pretty tough. But the one thing that kept me going was Simon Cowell, to be honest with you, because from the very first audition, I could see that he believed in me. And that's what he's very good at. He's good at spotting talent early on and saying, okay, yes, he or she is good, where a lot of the other judges may not be so discerning. And he always sort of gave me a smile, and I could tell by him that he was interested in me. And so every audition stage was kind of, I just felt, right, as long as I impress Simon, I'll be okay. Because, I'm convinced that Dani Minogue, who ended up being my so-called mentor, she hated me when she first saw me. And then when I went to Ibiza, for those people who don't know or don't watch the show, once you get through the first celebrity audition, you then go to the judges' houses. Now, I went to Ibiza, where Dani Minogue lives, apparently. I could see by her she hated me. It's almost like she had a phone call from Simon Cowell saying, Dani, just put him through. Because my audition was woeful. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. It was terrible. And I thought, well, I'm destined to fail here. I think I better pack my bags. But to my astonishment, I got through. So, and then it just became exciting. Because you're in the last 12, you're on telly, primetime TV, and then the competition really hots up. And I love that. Because then it's live, and you can't be manipulated or edited in any way. It's just you and the camera and the performance. And if the audience hate you, then fine. But luckily for me, I think I turned audience perception around.
So that's why I make no protest. When you say you will do the rest, go west. Life is peaceful there. Go west. Lots of open air. Go west. Where the skies are blue. Go west. This is what we're gonna do. There where the air is cool, where we will be what we want. And now if we take a chance, we'll find our promised land. Go west, life is peaceful there. Go west, in the open air. Go west, baby, you and me. Go west, this is our destiny. Go west. Go west, we'll be
One of the things I was going to ask you is, living in the X Factor world, in the world of television exposure, manipulation, call it what you like, how did this sort of rest with your own personal values in life?
Well, I mean, it's I'm a Christian, and I'm not shy about that. I'm absolutely love the fact that I have my faith, and I really had to ask God and pray to him and say, is this what you want me to do? And I just felt like I had a sense of the Spirit saying, yes, you're in this position for a reason. So I just went with it. And knowing that as well gave me a lot of confidence. But there are certain things in X Factor you think, well, that's a little bit not really what I stand for. For instance, you have a whole host of people who audition for X Factor who aren't necessarily very good. They're called the auditionees. And they're ridiculed and mocked. And yes, they make up the early stage of the show. And we all watch and crease ourselves laughing because they're so terrible. Well, I saw a different side to that. And it wasn't pretty because some of these people, they don't need to go in front of Simon Cowell. They need somebody to say, no, this show isn't right for you, but we've got people that can help you. But instead, they're put in front of millions of people to get shot down and laughed at. And I didn't agree with that so much. A career in music isn't all hunky-dory. In life, in general, in any career, I didn't find it affected me that much. As soon as the media found out I was a born-again Christian, obviously that spurred a little bit of interest and ridicule. But I didn't really care about that because, for me, my faith is more important than any judgment I have on this surf by media or journalists or fellow singers. You know, it didn't really matter.
Then sings my soul.
Thunder, thy power throughout the earth.
You've got the strength of your faith. You've also got the strength of your family behind you. How important is family to you?
Extremely important. And I've often said how supportive they've been through the years, no matter what I chose to do. And I had a wonderful upbringing. There's no doubt about that. Well, my parents found out I was doing the show, probably, I think I rang them from Ibiza and said, I'm in X Factor. My mum, in fairness, she didn't warm to it. She was like, really? What are you doing? I could totally see why. I was a young classical baritone singer and doing quite well. I was getting professional work alongside my studies, and I think her dream was to see me go on to the opera stage at Covent Garden, or maybe to the Sky, I don't know, but it was, X Factor wasn't that. So, but for me, I've always wanted to be commercial, sing well and properly, but also to lots of people. There's no point singing well if no one's going to hear it. So, my parents, they perhaps go, oh, really? They wince a little bit, and then they support you. And everybody saw how supportive they were during the live shows, and they came down every day. And my brother as well, everybody, my grandmother, my great-auntie. And I do pinch myself sometimes, Philip, you know, and I think, wow, I have great people around me. I really do. Your friends and family, and that's priceless. No fame or money or can compare to the love I have for my friends and family.
Yeah, and this presumably gives you the strength to go through all sorts of difficult situations. Can I return now to the music? You were already saying that you were studying to be a classical singer, and possibly there were hopes of Covent Garden, La Scala, whatever, and suddenly you find yourself on stage singing sort of Go West and things like that. You've said that you wanted to be a success sort of commercially, so there's no problem doing sort of both sides of the coin.
I don't think so. I mean, I've never looked down to my nose at music that perhaps isn't classical. I love all different styles of music, and if you're a performer, sometimes you're required to perform songs that perhaps you don't think is right for you. Let me rephrase that. I have a theatre background, and perhaps you're playing a role or singing a song that it's not your favorite song, but you're playing a role, so you can act it and make it believable. Do you know what, though? During the whole show, I found that these songs they were giving me were playing right into my hands, because they were great songs, big numbers, big theatrical numbers, and they put me in clothes which I lapped up. I mean, I love wearing outrageous clothes, and I just enjoyed, and I said before, and I'll say it again, I was very fortunate in X Factor, because I think the producers saw that I was getting the viewing figures in and I was interesting, and so they spent more money on my productions. Mm-hmm. So I was very blessed in that sense, because they spent the most money on my clothes and the staging, the lighting, and if you watch back, not that anybody wants to, but I always had lots of cast members during my productions.
That's true, yes.
You know, and whereas I feel sorry for the people who don't stand a chance, because they're just given a mic stand and that's it. I was fortunate, because I was never in that position. So I've always longed to kind of have Vegas-style productions, and I was given that in X Factor. So, you know, I enjoyed singing pop songs, classical rock songs, and I still do to this day. If I do a live tour, I will incorporate upbeat songs into my program.
Does this make it difficult for the general public to decide where you are in the scene of things?
I hope not. I mean, I have quite a cross-section of fans, if you like, and people who enjoy my music. And I think they like bits of everything. I would say it's not my intention to confuse people, but then if you see me perform live, I want it to be a all-encompassing musical experience where you're moved to tears one moment, you're laughing, maybe you're dancing a little bit, and that's the way I am, in the same vein as somebody like Shirley Bassey would do. I've always said I'm more like a Shirley Bassey or a Tom Jones than Pavarotti. I think my last album, however, perhaps confused people because it was a lot more classical. Mm. And if you walk on the street and say, you know that guy, Ridian, what kind of singer do you think he is? I'm not sure what your reaction would be, but I'm guessing they would say, oh, he's a classical pop, opera singer. But I would say I'm just a singer. I don't mind what genre it is. If it's good, it's good. I'll perform it.
My senses like a night in a forest, like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in the desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. You fill up my senses.
What I like about the way you do a song is the fact you say you actually put your heart into it, you live the song, and that this comes across on stage so well.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think that's the job for a singer, to really engage with the audience. And I do a lot of study with my songs before I perform them, really get to the meaning of the song and connect. It's like I feel stirred in my heart when I'm singing the song sometimes. Most of the time, actually, if the song is good. And if I'm getting that feeling, then I hope I can, it's a magnetic connection with an audience. I think it's essential. If you're just going through the motions, then you're conning everyone.
You're just about to launch off, I'm not going to say in a new direction, because you've done so many things from stage and shows. There's a couple of big shows coming up, isn't there? There's War of the Worlds, and I'll remember the second one in a minute. You'll have to remind me what the second one is.
Well, there's a few things actually coming up. I've just been asked to go into a West End show. It's Stephen Sondheim's 80th birthday celebrations this year, and he's bringing a show over from Broadway called Sondheim on Sondheim, and I'll be performing in that, or appearing in that, for a few weeks, I think in between October and November. And then I'm going to go into War of the Worlds, Jeff Wayne's War of the Worlds, and that's a kind of European tour, arena tour, which is very exciting. And then that goes until the 7th of January, and then I have a little bit of time off where I hope to release another album. There's an exclusive for you there, Philip.
Thank you very much.
And then March, I'm guesting in We Will Rock You, playing the role of Khashoggi, which will be a barrel of laughs, I'm sure.
Yes, I like your role in War of the Worlds, too. You're the mad parson, aren't you?
I am.
I think that's a fabulous role.
Yeah, it is. And to be working with Jeff Wayne is a huge honour as well. I mean, Jeff is just one of the most lovely people I've ever met in music, and hugely successful. Playing the role of Parson Nathaniel, and again, he saw me from X Factor. So X Factor, it does open doors, because you get these casting directors and writers watching the show, and they think, oh yeah, he'd be good for that. And Jeff saw me and thought he'd be great for Parson Nathaniel. So he got in touch, and I was delighted. It was a no-brainer. I said, absolutely. And I'm playing alongside Jason Donovan. My wife in the show is Liz McLarnon, ex-Atomic Kitten singer. You've got Justin Hayward, who was in the original War of the Worlds, and Justin from the Moody Blues, of course. And then this hologram of Richard Burton, which floats across the stage, 11 foot high. And so I actually interact with the great Welshman, which is quite eerie in a sense, sort of 26, 27 years after his death.
It's on my record rack. I've got the Jeff Wayne version, the sort of gatefold album. I've also got the original broadcast with Orson Welles of War of the Worlds.
So I'm
familiar with it all, and it's great. It's going to be a fantastic thing. This is going to be on a grand scale, isn't it?
Yeah, it's huge. We're playing arenas like the O2 Arena in London, Wembley Arena, the MEN, Manchester, NEC. And then I think we start in Holland and then go to... Then it's the UK, I think, and then... Belgium, Germany. We finish in Germany. It's huge. It's a show you can't really do in the West End, in a West End theatre, because it's not big enough to cater for all the set and the props that are used. You've got a 35-foot Martian fighting machine that descends from the lighting rig. It fires heat rays into the audience, which is pretty spectacular. There's lots of illusions and various things that go on. And yeah, we'll be playing to between 10 and 20,000 people every night, which is pretty awesome.
I want to pick up on another point, too. I mean, your life also involves a great deal of charity work. We know you've done loads of concerts for charity, and you're connected with one particular charity, and that's Crossroads, isn't it?
Yeah, Crossroads Care, which is very dear to my heart. My mum is a major part of Crossroads. She's been working for the charity, I think, for about 14 or 15 years, and she now manages the Welsh branch. And... it's to raise awareness, really, of the amazing work that carers do. I think we often overlook carers. And we've got to remember that people who care for their loved ones are saving the government millions of pounds. Yeah, millions of pounds per month. 6 million people caring in the UK. And that is a huge number of people that need some sort of respite. And Crossroads Care gives that. And my job really is to raise awareness and support them in any way I can. And I really want to see it flourish, like many charities do. You often hear of Marie Curie and the Prince's Trust, which I'm also an ambassador of. These are big players. And I really long to see my mum's charity. Well, it's not my mum's charity, but the charity my mum works for, Crossroads Care, right at the top. And, yeah, I just think it's a tremendous cause.
Of course, it's becoming increasingly important now with government cutbacks and one thing and another. So perhaps it will sort of be much more forward in the future, you know, in people's minds.
You're absolutely right. Everybody's trying to fight for their own corner, aren't they? But I really hope that the grants that Crossroads Care get aren't cut substantially, because that would really affect things. Hmm. Young carers as well. I mean, as a youngster, seeing these kids, they still have to go to school. Many of them have a job, and they have to look after perhaps their mum and their dad. Now, they have no time whatsoever for extracurricular activities, no time to socialize and have fun. So again, what we can do in Crossroads Care is provide respite in the form of a carer who works closely with the family to establish a relationship, so the person who's being cared for trusts them and is happy with them. And then they can go in for a day or two, and then that young boy or girl can have time away, time having fun somewhere. I think it's so important.
Do you get a lot of feedback from the Crossroads work?
Well, I do from my fan site, to be honest. It's amazing the response since I came out of the X Factor 3 years ago. The fans soon became aware that I was supporting Crossroads Care, and in fairness to them, they work tirelessly to support the charity, be it going on walks, they'll sell merchandise, the percentage goes to Crossroads. There are various things, and you can see that on my fan site if you go on the internet. Really touching, actually, the amount of work that my fans do. And then, yeah, I do hear back from head office, and I get invited round to the head office in London to have chats with the manager of Crossroads and see if we can do more, and I hope to put on more concerts in the future, specifically for Crossroads. I can, you know, if you're in the public eye, and many people will tell you, you're asked to do loads of charity work. And I would love to help everybody, but the reality is that I can't. I support the Prince's Trust because the Prince of Wales heard me perform. I performed at one of his events, and he asked me to become an ambassador, which you can't really turn the Prince of Wales down.
Not really, no.
And I think it's a great cause, and I'm delighted to be associated with that. But these are big players, like I said earlier, so they can put on events and sell out and make lots of money for the charity, but Crossroads Care needs to build, and perhaps we need to change our marketing ploy. I'm not sure, but I fully intend to help them.
I gather you've also been out to Africa as well.
Yeah, I did last in January. I went to Kenya for 2 weeks to it's called Raise the Roof. It's really a friend of mine who started the charity. She went out to Kenya the year before and then saw a need for a school. She pitched her idea to me, and I thought, well, I have a bit of spare money at the moment, why not help out? And I was delighted that I did, because I went out, met the local people who were just divine. I mean, they have so little, but you would never know, with their beautiful smiles and the way they are so giving. Unbelievable, really. So it was a pleasure to help them, and it's great to see the school there in Mutapa, which is a little village just outside Mombasa. I'm just having the most incredible experiences. And I find I have that most when I'm serving others.
Sadness, and every night is filled with tears. Someone's arms are reaching out to hold you, to shelter you from all your fears. If every cloud grows dark above you, have some faith. The skies will soon be blue. Where on earth the cherish one another, a million lives won't hide the great to truth. When you're lost and don't know where you are, feeling like you're out there on your own, I will be with you each step of the way. I won't let you walk that road alone. If there's a mountain you cannot climb, 'cause it seems your strength is almost gone, take my hand till you grow stronger, and we shall find a way to carry on. When you're lost and don't know where you are, feeling like you're out there on your own, I will be with you each step of the way. I won't let you walk that road.
Can I ask you about plans for the future? We've mentioned the shows you're going to do. Where would you like to go, and what would you really like to be doing? Is it going to be more of the same? Are you more or less where you want to be, or have you got plans?
That's a really great question, because I feel very grateful for what I've got and where I'm at in my career. But if truth be told, I would love to branch out and perhaps tour Europe and further afield in worldwide. And I don't feel that my last record label, Psycho, it's only gave me that opportunity. So there's a whole new world out there that I want to discover through my music. My next album is pretty crucial, and I've got two different offers on the table that I can't really talk about at the moment, but very contrasting. One would be very similar to what I've been doing, which is the safe option with a major record label. Or I go a little bit left field with an independent who distribute for a major. But the style and the concept is, I find exciting, but I'm not sure whether my fans will think the same. But I have an inkling that they might. I think fortune favors the brave. And I don't mean financial fortune here, but kind of the, I have to be bold. I've always been like that in my decisions. So I think the future, the future's exciting, slightly scary, but the good thing is I have my theatre and my concert work as my safety net, which allows me to take risks. I struggled really over the past 3 years with poor management. I was given management after X Factor, and they didn't really work hard on my behalf, I'll be honest. Luckily, I've done away with them now. I've got a different team around me, a team that I can trust, a team that aren't multimillionaires. They need to work hard, you know, whereas my last management were, they were just too rich. And it was hard because I had all these aspirations and dreams and I wasn't supported properly. And I wasn't really, but I don't want to sound bitter here. I mean, in many ways, I enjoyed my time with Simon Cowell, and but they didn't really launch me to the next level. Well, I have plans to branch out.
Yes, I like the sound of that. You talk about building up a team around you, and I think of one or two of your concerts. You've got a team on stage as well around the Cardiff area, because you've got Catherine Finch, the harpist, and Cordith, of course. They sort of feature fairly highly. And again, you seem to have built up a team of great musicians around you, and you all seem to work so comfortably together in the concerts in Wales.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the great thing about Wales is that we have these amazing musicians, and we're regularly doing concerts together. We know each other, and we know what we do musically. And you went to the Eisteddfod, as we mentioned, and you might be surprised to hear that we had 5 minutes rehearsal for that.
Well, oddly enough, we were standing outside the pavilion and we could hear the sound checks and things going on, so I did gather that perhaps time was a little pushed.
Time was very pushed. But, you know, you need to just come together and make it happen. And luckily with artists like Catherine, who is the best harpist in the world, it can. Got a few words the wrong way around, I must admit. It wasn't perfect last night. Not last night. When was it? Last Saturday. Mm-hmm. I think by and large, we put on a good show.
Oh, it was a great evening. We thoroughly enjoyed it, and I know everybody else did as well. You could see by the reaction. Wonderful venue, too. What a great tent that is, isn't it?
Yeah, the Pink Pavilion. Yeah. It's so nice that it was in Ebble Vale this year, because it's not a hugely well-speaking area, if I'm honest. Usually, like the year before, I went to North Wales, because for those people who don't know, one year it's in North Wales, the next is South Wales, and it varies like that. And when we're in North Wales, you get sell-out crowds, and people come in their droves, because of course their main language is Welsh. But then to bring it to Ebble Vale was a good move, I felt.
I think I would agree with you there. I think it was good, not just on a cultural level, but also on a level, you know, for the community, for confidence building within the community, in a community that had been hit fairly hard in past years when the steelworks closed.
Very hard, yeah. And it's nice to hear that they're going to be doing a lot of regeneration projects and spending a lot of money, putting a lot of money into Ebble Vale, which I'm really glad about.
Yeah, it was a great event and we enjoyed it. Well, all I can say is, Rhydian, whatever you do, wherever you go, I know you're going to have a pretty loyal fan base following you around the world. It's been absolutely great talking to you. I wish you every success in the future, and I hope we can link up again sometime.
Likewise. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, Philip. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Shall